Blog Talk Radio.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, do ordain and establish this
and
Constitution,
so, my fellow Americans,
the United States of America.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do.
This nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
So sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
From the very heart of the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America, from the soul of the Bellwether State, Missouri Grassroots Radio is live.
We are live Friday night. It's the MGC Radio Roundtable. Lisa Payne Nager is here tonight. Hi, Lisa. How are you? And Frida Keough from Missouri Precinct Project is here. How you doing, Frida?
I'm doing great.
Well, okay. We're going to have a great show tonight. We've got this Missouri Precinct Project thing going. What's happening to, nowadays in the Missouri Precinct Project, Frida?
Well, we're working, when I say we, I mean Judy Safka and myself, we're working very hard to put together a seminar called Winning in November on July 14 at the Pillar on Clayton Road. It's called the Pillar Foundation. And we're lining up speakers. We are so excited. We have Bill Dallas from Champion the Vote. He was on the show last week.
Right.
He's going to come and talk a little bit, and we'll have somebody from True the Vote out of Texas.
Okay.
True the Vote has done a fantastic job in going into states, cleaning up the voter rolls with volunteers, training poll workers to make sure that poll workers do the right thing, training poll watchers that make sure that everything is done according to state law. That's the morning session, and then in the afternoon we have the people from American Majority and Political Gravity, and those are the people that train grassroots people to go knock on doors and identify people that need to register, identify people that need to go to the polls, identify people that want to work with some other organization, et cetera, et cetera. So what it is, it's a full day utilizing national groups that are doing this across the country to help us motivate, train volunteers to go work on campaigns or to go knock on doors.
Absolutely outstanding. And This is what we've been saying at Missouri Grassroots Coalition since we started, and this is really the crux of Lisa's Wednesday night show, the Culture Vigilante, is directly at the mission of winning the country. And if we're going to do that, recognizing that we're going to do that precinct by precinct, not from the top down, but that we're going to do it door to door, precinct by precinct, caucus by caucus, right?
The ground up.
Yep, that's exactly right. And if you have a question for Frida, it's 347-677-1835. So listeners, get on in here, 347-677-1835. This is the grassroots organization when it comes to educating voters, getting the vote out, and getting things moving at the precinct level.
Thing we are so excited. We have been preaching about this for over a year now, telling people that if they want to change things, we have to change things. We have to change the party from the ground up. There is so many people that have filed for committee people. They call it different things in different counties, but precinct captains, central committee participants, all across the state of Missouri. There is so many people running for these positions, and this is the the grassroots of the party, and I'm making a wager that by the end of this year, the party will look different because different people have decided to run for these lowest level positions, and they'll have an impact. There's no other way around to say it.
Absolutely, absolutely, and I agree with you 100%. My friend Ron and I were talking about that just last night, and if you folks out there, if you grassroots people want to get involved in politics, you don't need to run for governor or senator. We need good people to run for these precinct and committee seats, because if you're sitting out there, as most of us who are true patriots are right now, grumbling and moaning because the party, quote unquote, seems to have picked Mitt Romney before we ever had a voice, you know, that's where that's done. That's where those kinds of party, quote unquote, decisions are made, at those committees, up to the state committees and up to the national committee. And if you want to make a difference in the way the party that seems to have run away from you is going, then you get a chance to get in there at the committee level and help make that change, right, Frieda?
Exactly. That's where it starts. And you know, these committee people, in all, after the elections are over, the various state committees are formed, legislative committees, congressional committees, senatorial committees, and that's where they draw on the people at the committee level, at the precinct level, and that's how they move up and help make decisions for the party.
That's right. So listen, people, if you and listen to what Frieda is saying here, because it's so important. A legislator who wants to run for your spot to represent you in Jefferson City, he goes out there, he tells you that things are all screwy in Jefferson City, and he wants to go there to try to help fix it. He gets up to Jefferson City, his first weekend in town, the party takes him out for a retreat, and the party sits him down and says, okay, I know what all that crap you told those people when you wanted them to vote for you. This is the way it's going to be, and that party, quote unquote, is what's really driving the agenda in the legislature, and by taking those committee seats and getting yourself involved in that quote unquote party, do you ever get to fix that problem?
Correct. That's where it's at.
So how do I mean, is the Missouri Precinct Project, is it something I can join, or is it kind of a closed club? What's up with that, Frieda?
Well, if you go to our website, MoPrecinctProject.org,
okay,
we say right at the top, join us, sign up. And what signing up means, different things. You are on our email list, and, you know, we send out a lot of different emails. We send out newsletters. We tell people what to do, what's news, what's the latest. You can sign up to become a volunteer, which potentially means you are willing to go out, knock on doors. We give you packages. We give you walk lists. Or you're just an observer. We have county coordinators. We are trying to find somebody in each county that sort of takes care of that county for us. Let me give you an example. We have somebody in Jasper County, Joplin, John Putnam. He runs that county. He's a committeeman. He's very much involved. He organizes things around the county. He's very astute. He's a very good political observer. And he makes sure that people are informed, people are registered, people go to the polls, and people know what's going on. And he does all that. He drives that process. And that's what we want our county coordinators to do.
Okay. Thanks, Frieda, for that. So there it is, folks. MoPrecinctProject.org. MoPrecinctProject.org. And sign up to get involved here. And listen, What Frieda's talking about here is one of the most important things going on in the grassroots level. Most of the people in our audience, most of the people in Missouri Grassroots Coalition, most of the people who are even politically aware in the state of Missouri still do not realize that those committee positions are elected positions. They think it's just all party run. Those are elected positions. So you get elected to be one of the people that runs the party.
There is no, in my opinion, with this election, if just half the people that have decided to file for these positions, if just half of them get elected, the party will change.
Right. And there are, listen, brothers and sisters, there are hundreds of committees in this state where there's nobody sitting in the chair. All you've got to do to make this difference is to go down and put your name on the ballot, because there are literally hundreds of these seats with nobody sitting in them. Right, Frieda?
Absolutely. You can become a write-in candidate. You can do that today. You can do that up to 3 days before August 7th. There is many precincts across the state. The estimates are between 40% and 50% of these positions across the country are open, so anybody can file.
So just think, 40% to 50% of these seats are unopened. What kind of a difference could you make on the party that you sit around complaining about not being responsive to you, just by going out and filing for one of these seats?
One of our other pet peeves is the same thing holds true for all of the positions at your local level. People need to start getting involved. Go to school board meetings, go to city hall meetings, go to your local municipality meetings, pay attention to the firefighters unions, pay attention to the fire districts and ambulance districts. We all hear about the outrageous pensions these people vote themselves in, and nobody watches it. And then municipal elections every 2 years in April, only or less than 10% of the people bother to go and vote. And then they complain about their taxes.
That's right.
I don't understand it.
Yep, that's absolutely right. And listen up, that's moprecinctproject.org. This is, in my opinion, one of the most important working organizations in politics in the state of Missouri, and groups like it in other states in the country. I mean, this is the group that is giving you the chance and the education you need to fix all the things, fellow conservatives, that you've been complaining about for the last 4 years, and certainly been complaining about all during this primary, when none of you thought that you had a real voice in the presidential pick, because the party had already made its determination before you started. This Missouri Precinct Project is really the most important organization out there to educate you and to help you figure out where you fit in the picture to fix all those problems. Go, Frieda.
Now, let me say something about the Missouri Precinct Project. Why did we start this? After the 2010 election, we felt, we need to do a better job in getting people organized, in getting the vote out, educating people, telling them what's going on, et cetera, et cetera. And one of my driving forces was, I was not born and raised in this country. I was born and raised under the effects, the after effects of a fascistic regime. I experienced firsthand the total collapse and chaos of the downfall of one of those regimes. And I'm just afraid that we're looking at it. I mean, it's staring us right in the face, and I do not want to go there again.
And that is Frieda. I think that's great. That's a great testimonial, because Americans still to this day take what they have so for granted, don't they?
Yes, they can't imagine that anything would ever change.
Exactly. And it absolutely amazes me that we can look at the history, the very, very recent history and the current news even of what you're talking about going on in the world today and with open eyes want to go there.
I know. It's incomprehensible that people would want to go there.
It is, isn't it? Okay, I don't know.
I'm going to make one more pitch and then I'll let
no,
you...
No, no, please. Please, the show is yours, Frida. Go.
There is many different grassroots groups across the state. And most grassroots groups, including the Missouri Precinct Project, we don't want to be partisan. We don't want to be viewed as supporting one over the other. But all the grassroots groups need to go out now and support the candidates of their choice. Well, so this is the idea that we're probably going to push out very quickly. And I said before, John Putnam, he did this in Joplin. And I think we need to do this for each congressional district. Each congressional district, all the grassroots groups get together and have their own convention and select a slate of candidates that they want to support. And
yeah,
then that's the people we're going to help win the primary.
I agree. And I had the privilege of hearing Putnam and actually talking with him. He came to Springfield 3 months ago and addressed the Locke and Smith Society. I was at that meeting and heck of a guy, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, and again, like Frida says, the Missouri Precinct Project, which started as an offshoot, I believe, of Putnam's Patriots. Am I right?
Something like that. Yes.
Yeah. Putnam, who's proud of his heritage all the way back to General Putnam of the Revolutionary War, is all about liberty and the need for you to be involved in the work, you know, the whole government by the people, of the people, for the people thing. And so, of course, he is, and Missouri Precinct Project is nonpartisan. I mean, they are as interested in getting everyone interested in participating, no matter who they are. Now, on the other hand, we are quite partisan, and we like to use the Precinct Project to educate you as to how you can get involved in our partisan effort. But we do understand, Frida, that this is a nonpartisan effort that you're involved in, and we appreciate that.
But we can still get together, the different grassroots group, for instance, for the second district, and vote on all the various candidates of which ones we would like to win.
Right.
And then those are the people that all the grassroots groups can go out and support.
Exactly.
And it's not a rigged system. Everybody gets a vote. Everybody that shows up gets a vote. And if there's a tie, then we have a runoff, and we come up with a slate of candidates for the August 7th primary.
Very good, very good. And I wanna piggyback on what Frida said there when she said everyone who shows up gets a vote, because the same thing. And I spent the better part of my hour last night talking about this. The same thing amounts to what happens in the primary election and the general election, brothers and sisters, sitting out there talking about my guy didn't win, so I'm not going to vote. Everyone who shows up gets to vote. Everyone who doesn't show up, just quit your whining and sit down and wait for your turn 4 years from now.
Right. Anyway, do you think that'll fly?
Do I think it'll fly? I think it'll fly to a great extent. I think it'll fly to a better than 50% extent. I think that more than 50% of the people who are sitting out there now crying in their beer because their man or woman didn't win are going to end up voting. I think the other 40%, half of them are going to just, you know, shut up. We saw it with Ron Paul 4 years ago. I mean, his people were out, they were active, they were vocal. Half of them didn't vote at all, but they kind of went away and we're quiet until time for another run at it, and that you'll see a lot of that again. But then there is a percentage of those people who are going to be out there trying their best to help Barack Obama win by over and over and over again bad-mouthing the Republican candidate day after day after day as though they were, in fact, leftists.
Well, that'll get you somewhere.
Yeah, I'm sure it will, yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, let me make one comment about the Ron Paul people. Many of these committee people that have filed for the August 7 election are Ron Paul people.
Absolutely, because, and listen, you can say what you want to about Ron Paul. You can say what you want to about the Ron Paul people, but they are grassroots activists and passionate about what they believe.
They're educated. They're organized. They know what they're talking about. And I think if they get elected, it definitely will change the party because they want to work within the party as well.
Right.
And I think that's a good thing. I mean, the Republican Party people that you talk to, they're scared of their own shadow. They don't want the Ron Paul people. And I'm saying, well, what's the problem with it? How can they hurt if they want to become committee people?
That's right. That's right. And listen, you others on the right, if you don't like the Ron Paul people in the committee, get out there and file for a seat.
Exactly.
Okay, Frieda, we're going to take a quick break here. We're going to come back. Thanks for being with us. You hang on, and after the break, we'll talk a couple of seconds more. Thanks.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners. Show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
Jobs, taxes, traditional family values, education, protecting the unborn, Second Amendment, tort reform. These are the issues facing Missourians today. Hi, I'm Terry Barner. As your next state senator, I will continue to work to change government by preserving our liberties, reining in wasteful spending, and making the state of Missouri responsive to its citizens. I am a pro-life constitutionalist who believes our state and federal constitution are there for our protection from overreaching government. I firmly believe that only by ignoring those documents has the government at all levels been able to trample on the liberty of its people. I would appreciate your vote this August 7th. I'm Terry Barner, and I approve this message. I've got a feeling that the night is
so dear, for peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
Absolutely. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio Network, the number one voice of true liberty in a land where liberty is seriously under fire. This is Friday night. It's the MGC Roundtable. We've been talking with Frieda Keough from the Missouri Precinct Project. And tell us one more time how to find the Missouri Precinct Project online, Frieda.
Our website is moprecinctproject.org, all one word. Check it out. Sign up to get our newsletter. Sign up to become a volunteer. Sign up to become a county coordinator.
And go to Winning in November.
Yes, go to Winning in November. That's a seminar we're having on July 14. You learn all about grassroots activities at the local level.
We love the Missouri Precinct Project here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, Frieda, and we're glad that you guys are active in Missouri Grassroots Coalition and keeping our feet to the fire on staying involved locally. Thank you very, very much. You feel free. Now, we're going to move on with the show, but you feel free to stick around and take part. This is a roundtable discussion, and you're welcome to stay for as long as you want.
Well, thank you for giving us this opportunity to talk about our organization. I really appreciate that.
You come back anytime, Frieda. You and Judy are certainly welcome here anytime.
Okay.
Look, we have something here tonight going on that I think is ultimately important to us at the grassroots level. And I consider myself a fairly politically aware guy. I try to stay up on things. Now I'm a libertarian, so I'm really not heavily into the party politics on either side. I'm kind of disliked by both sides, and I have an equal dislike for both sides, quite frankly. And so that kind of, I guess I could blame that for kind of keeping me out of the loop. But there really is no excuse for it except not educating myself. And I don't know how many of you out there are like that, but when I go to read what's going on in the legislature and I get to this legislative agenda, the calendar for the day, and I see that something is read first time, read second time, read third time, out of committee, do pass, out of committee, don't pass, substituted, amended, joint committee, and I just, my head just spins, and I have all the respect in the world for people who spend full time following this kind of stuff, because it just absolutely amazes me how you can even keep up with all the stuff that's going on and all the ins and outs. And tonight we have a friend of ours who's here to tell us exactly how all that works. Carl Bearden. Carl, how are you?
Hey, Dave, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Well, you're more than welcome. Thanks for being here. I appreciate it. Carl has a history as a legislator. Am I right, Carl?
That's correct, actually, on the local level for 8 years in St. Charles County Council and 7.5 in the state legislature.
Well, there you go. And so here's a guy who knows. Which side of the rotunda were you on, Carl?
I was on the House side. I was when I came into the legislature, I was in the minority. We took the majority in my sophomore term. I became the budget chairman. It's only about the second time in 30 years we actually cut the budget. And then I became Speaker pro tem for the rest of my time after that.
Okay. So here's a guy who knows how it works, and he's here to tell us how it works and clear up some of all this confusion. And then you came out of the legislature, and you did spend some time as a lobbyist. Am I right?
That's correct. When I left the legislature, I began to lobby for tax reform, educational reform, those sorts of things. A lot of things that I supported as a legislator. So it was just natural fit.
Okay, good. And so let's take a minute here before we get started and talk about this, because, you know, at the grassroots level, in these grassroots organizations, in the local Tea Parties and in the local Fair Tax groups and the local 912 groups, when you say the word lobbyist, suddenly people see big monsters with bucket loads of money and you know, sharp tails and pointy horns. And is lobbying always a bad thing, Carl?
No, actually, everybody lobbies probably every day of their life for something. You know, you lobby with your wife or your husband for whatever. You lobby at your job to do things. But specifically in the political arena, lobbying is a necessary function. What really gets people kind of mixed up and then mad, like you say, seeing, you know, spitting fire and pointy tails and stuff, is some of the issues that get lobbied on. And there's also a difference in big money. We talk about big money. A lot of that occurs at the federal level. There's not as nearly as much money at the state level, but there are still corporations, companies that spend money with lobbyists to make campaign contributions. But I will tell you, in my nearly 18 years of 16 years of elected office, I never had one lobbyist, a corporate, grassroots, or otherwise, ever come to me and say, we gave you money and we expect you to do X, Y, Z. That's just what happens.
And you never did that.
No. And so lobbying, though, has a function. And there are all sorts of different kind of lobbyists, just so people know. So let's set that up. You know, there are obviously corporations and commercial entities, even individuals, hire lobbyists to do just lobbying for their particular purpose. And a lobbyist may have more than one client. but they hire them during legislative session to you know, lobby for their point of view or their issue. There are lobbyists, for example, I lobby on behalf of United for Missouri, which is the organization which I'm the executive director of. I'm also executive director of United for Missouri's Future, which is a sister organization. It's a 501c3 nonprofit. And so I don't get paid to lobby. It's just part function as being executive director, and we have over 65,000 members statewide. And so I spend a lot of time during session watching what's going on, reporting to our membership, blogging to our membership, and sharing with others about what's going on, and helping other grassroots lobbyists, like folks with Focus on the Family type folks, or Concerned Women for America, or Missouri Eagle Forum, those sorts of folks, let people know that now is the time when they need to weigh in. And we had over 23,000, almost 25,000 emails sent to legislators this year, and almost without exception, legislators reacted positively to those and accomplished those. Then you have people who are quote, citizen lobbyists, like Ron Calzone from Missouri First.
Right.
And Ron is not a registered lobbyist. I am a registered lobbyist because there are too many people slinging arrows at me for me not to be. It's just safer legally and everything else for me to be registered. Ron does it without being registered. He's looked at the law, and he's convinced that as a citizen, he has the ability and the right to come to Jefferson City, which he does often, and to speak to legislators. And so he does it. So you have a wide range of people who are, quote, lobbyists. Some are registered, some are not. And all of them play a role or a function. And really, if you don't like something that a lobbyist does, you really need to blame the elected official for listening to them if they get what they're after.
Absolutely. And let's just be blunt here, Carl. If you are a member of Missouri Grassroots Coalition, if you are a member of the AARP, if you are a member
right.
of, if you buy Blue Cross Blue Shield insurance, you are paying, well, not in the case of Missouri Grassroots Coalition, but if you are in the AARP or if you buy Blue Cross and Blue Shield insurance, you are paying a lobbyist.
Right, and most of them, and I'll tell you that an AARP is one of my pet peeves as a legislator. they lobbied against their members' best interest for their organization.
Absolutely.
And one of the things I pushed as a legislator, and I'm still pushing it now as part of what we do in United for Missouri, is to eliminate taxpayer-funded lobbyists. And that, to me, you know, corporate lobbyists, you know, they go after things that we don't agree with. But you know, we're all out there fighting against that, but at least we know what they're doing. Taxpayer-funded lobbying, when your city belongs to the Missouri Municipal League, or your
exactly.
county belongs to the Missouri Association of Counties, and so
yep.
on and so forth, your tax money that you pay to those organizations is being used by those organizations to hire lobbyists who most of the time work against the interest of those taxpayers paying that.
That's absolutely right.
And let me give you a prime example. You may be aware of the sales tax holidays that exist not only in Missouri but in several states around the country. When those things became popular, the very first one we had was a back-to-school sales tax holiday. And the sales tax holiday is where the state foregoes a collection of sales tax in order to make it easier for people to buy clothing and computers and so forth for going back to school. So the state said, we're going to waive our collection of sales taxes for those 3 days. They left it up to local governments whether or not to waive their sales taxes. Now, the Municipal League and Missouri Association of Counties wanted the ability for them not to take a vote on it and just collect the taxes if they decided not to take a vote on it. I think that's the coward's way out. And I put an amendment on the bill, for example, that said, if you're going to say you're going to charge sales taxes that weekend, you have to go on the line and vote to charge your people sales taxes for the weekend. And they hate that kind of stuff.
Right.
And so the next ones that they did, they got it so that they didn't have to take a vote. They had to take a vote to participate instead of not to. So those are sorts of things that your taxpayer money is being used to lobby against you. And to me, that's actually the worst kind of lobbying, is when you're paying to be lobbied against.
Yep. I agree.
Sorry for the soapbox, but that's where.
No. I thank you very much. And we could do, and might in the future, Carl, do a whole a whole half hour or 45 minutes of a show just on this lobbying thing and how it works and who the good guys are and who the bad guys are. Because I think that's another educational project we need in organization after organization where, as we've said, you know, just the word lobby has such a connotation and such a turnoff that people, but seriously, I mean, without even talking about the moneyed lobbies like the municipal organizations, Blue Cross Blue Shield and the AARP, who I have as much disdain for as you do, If you're in a group like the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, where our dream one day is to be big enough that we are the voice, the one person in Jefferson City who is the voice of 150,000 people, you are in a lobbying organization. I mean, when that occurs, you have a lobbyist in Jefferson City. Anyone who's right. trying to drive the agenda in Jefferson City is a lobbyist.
Right. And when folks, we have rallies down in Jefferson City, you know, we sometimes all go together and have a collective rally where we invite all of our folks and so forth. And any time that you're down there doing that and then go out and talk to senators and representatives, you're lobbying. I mean, that's
right.
That's just the process.
Yeah. I mean, and a good many of our own members, we all went up to Jefferson City on consent of the governed day, and we went, you know, down
right.
the hall and we
sure.
talked to our own. Okay. Well, enough
well,
of that.
Well, let me
tell you, go ahead.
Well,
go
let
ahead,
me
Carl.
Say one more thing, because my experience as a legislator was day in, day out, we heard from all the people who wanted more of our tax money. Rarely did we ever hear from people who said, you know, we think you're spending enough. And until, you know, the movement started, you know, back in 2008, 2009, that's all changed now.
Yes.
And so the playing field in Jefferson City, for example, no longer belongs to those who want more of our tax money. Now it's a duke them out sort of thing, and that's a great change.
Yeah.
So don't give up on it. People should not give up on it at all.
No, I agree. I agree 100%. And you know, it was so discouraging. This term up there was so discouraging to me, Carl. I mean, it is just hard to look at the results of this last legislative term and believe that grassroots Tea Party is what's running the show up there, because it just ain't so, really. But like you say, we need to not get discouraged. We need to keep it up. I think the tide is turning, and I think we're in the driver's seat now.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, if you look at things that did happen that were very positive, I think, insurance exchange bill that we're going to vote on in November that prohibits the governor and elected bureaucrats from setting up the Obama exchange without a vote of the people or the legislature, that's a very positive deal. That was directly influenced by grassroots people. There's no question about it. Had it not been for grassroots getting involved, that never would have happened. Cutting $50 million out of the budget, that would have established the foundation for Obamacare exchange in the Medicaid program got cut out. That never would have happened without grassroots participation. So we are having an impact, and it's, you know, it's not an overnight thing, and that's what people have to understand. This is a long-term battle. It's not just one year, one day, one bill. It's forever vigilance, because by not being vigilant, that's why we're having to fight so hard right now.
No, that's right. That's right. And I would be very impressed with our efforts. If Carl, it took the better part of 150 years to go from the Constitution of the United States and a pure democratic republic to where we are now. I mean, to
mm-hmm.
basically,
right.
and I would be absolutely impressed and amazed if we had that halfway turned around by the time I'm in the grave.
that would be a good goal to have, wouldn't it?
It would.
Not to have
it
you
would.
In a grave, but to turn it around.
Okay, I want to talk about one more thing before we start talking about what we're going to talk about. I want to warn our listeners, we're probably going to run a little over tonight because I'm getting carried away with some of this other stuff that is other than what we called Carl here for. Carl, you were up there. You were in the legislature. I've got two good people down here, two people that I still consider good people, Burleson and Dixon are my guys. Now, they come around, they knock on my door, they talk to me, they get my, both of them get my vote because they're solid Tea Party patriots. They believe in limited government. And then, boom, they get into Jefferson City, and I open up the calendars, and I open up the agendas, and I see them, you know, voting for prescription drug monitoring acts and things like this. And I mean, what happens to a, did they just lie to me at my front door, or did they get turned around after they got there, or do they, what happens when yeah. you get to Jefferson City as a guy like that?
Right. And both guys that you mentioned,
great guys.
No, I've served with Bob. I can't remember if I served with Eric or not, but I served with Bob in the House before he went to the Senate. And so both those are good guys. But what happens is you get down there and you get overwhelmed with information, with people, and sound good. I mean, you know, there are 2,000 bills a year that get filed, and sometimes you get off track, you lose track. I mean, I admit that, you know, looking back on some things that I did when I was there with clearer vision today, I'm wondering myself. I said, I don't understand why I did that.
Yeah.
And so it does happen. But the thing of it is that not to give up on people like that, to hold them accountable, you know, and say, you know, hey, Eric, hey, Bob, you know, that was bad. What in the world possessed you to do that? And
yep.
and there probably isn't a good answer that you would accept, but knowing what their answer is might help you understand how to reach them next time.
Right, and this is where you get to get a plug in for your organization, Carl and Ron and Ron's organization is you know it's enough after the session is over to look back at what these guys do and say, oh man, this was screwy, that was really messed up. How in the heck did you come up with that? With that idea, and it can make a difference if you get in there when the decisions are being made and talk to these people with emails, with phone calls, and
right.
hold their feet to the fire every day.
Right. So that's the important thing in how you do it, because otherwise all they're hearing from are the other guys.
That's right.
And so on prescription drug monitoring, for example. You know, there. If you listened to what the folks who were supporting that said, it sounded good.
Sounded great, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And so it's easy to get lost in that, particularly if you're not getting why you shouldn't do that on the other side. And so that's what we try to do. Night for Missouri, we try to alert people on what's going on. We send out action alerts and, hey, you need to contact these folks. We'll even help you out with trying to put something together to do that. And so we try to be real time, because if you wait too long, you've already missed the boat. And
right.
you know, Ron Calzone of Missouri First, Ron and those folks do a great job of committee witness forms.
Right.
Getting those online and signed. So that's a great niche that they fill there, for example. And that's really what's key about this movement, is the folks that try to do everything end up doing nothing because
right.
you get overloaded. If you break down what everybody's trying to do into these pieces that people can excel on, you get a lot further. And so working together really is key. You know, there are some organizations you know, it's kind of, well, you know, we've got to be the leader, and so nothing really happens. But as long as everybody's willing to work together, said, you fill that role, you fill this role, and we all come together, and it's a great quilt that, you know, that we put together to cover this thing. And certainly, you know, Missouri First and Missouri Grassroots Coalition, United for Missouri, and others do that effectively. And then sharing information back and forth is very important as well.
And that's what we like to push ourselves as at Missouri Grassroots Coalition is kind of the kind of we really don't do anything, Carl. I mean, you guys spend all day long looking at this legislation and following bills, and we really don't do anything but be there with as big a group of people of citizens and citizen groups as possible, and try to be a central point for Missouri First and United for Missouri and Missouri Precinct Project and people like that,
right,
who have
right.
these things, the Agenda 21 people, Lane, with the Agenda 21 stuff, and all of these people who are spending their full time on a single project that geez, brothers and sisters, if you don't believe me, it makes my head swim just to go try to track down one bill that these guys are talking about. So you can imagine that these folks are spending their full time doing it, and all we ever try to or hope to be is a central point where Ron and Carl and Judy and Frida and Lane can come with the information that they've got and get it to you so that you can act on it, because you got a full-time job, you go to work 9 to 5 every day, and no yep. one expects you to keep track of this. And so that's what we want to do for you. Okay.
Well, that's
all right.
That's what we try to do. We have three main missions: educate, communicate, and activate. And exactly what you're talking about has to happen. You know, people get educated on what's going on, communicate to them what's going on, but then they have to get activated, because it doesn't do any good to know something if you don't do anything with that knowledge. And so what you're talking about, what Missouri Grassroots Coalition, focus and trying to be that clearinghouse is exactly what's needed, because people then take that. And, you know, you and I have probably some different interests. When I see something come across, I'm all over this. But the next thing comes along, I'm interested, but I'm not that interested. But that's right in your wheelhouse.
Right.
And so that's what you have to do. And so Missouri Grassroots Coalition serving as that clearinghouse is a great, great mission. We appreciate that.
Well, yeah, we appreciate you. I mean, I can't tell you the number of times that I've actually gotten activated myself by something that you've come and dropped in on us. And listen, folks, if you think for a minute that your voice doesn't matter, I wish you'd stayed up all night long with us and listened to the filibuster, where seven men and women, stopped that prescription drug bill in its tracks. Seven honest, loyal people stopped that prescription drug monitoring bill, and they did it by standing there all night long reading your emails to the Senate about how horrible this thing was.
Makes a difference.
It sure does. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, Carl, and then we'll come back and do what we're actually here for.
Okay.
Thanks. Hey, it's Dave. Who's this?
Okay, Missouri Patriots, I don't have to remind you that our ancestors fought and died for our right to exercise our voices and shape government in the interests of the people. And yet, in most elections, less than 20% of the population bothers to vote. Gas prices are outrageous, the economy is a disaster, and we are being regulated to death. Bad government and weak leadership are destroying the American way of life on a national and state level, and it's time to send a message to Washington, D.C. and Jefferson City and tell them we have had enough. If you're not registered to vote, the deadline to be eligible to vote in the August primary is July 11th and October 10th for the general election in November. The Patriot Revolution begins in 2012, and it happens at the polls. Vote in the August primary and the November general election, and bring a friend. The Constitutional Republic depends on it.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
We're back now. We got Carl Bearden here from United for Missouri. I want to put a plug in for Krista Branch, that theme song of ours, I Am America. That was the theme song for Herman Cain. We kind of borrowed it with Krista's permission to use as the theme song for our show. I really love that song. You can buy that, in fact, and support Krista a little bit at iTunes. You can buy that song for 99 cents. I've cut about 30 seconds out of it and made it a ringtone. And when any of my friends from Missouri Grassroots Coalition call, I know they're on the line, because I get a feeling that the tide is turning. Listen, we got TJ on the line from Indiana. TJ, how are you?
All right.
What you got to throw in here for us tonight?
What you guys are talking about, I feel almost there is a huge disconnect with the grassroots and the kind of the regulars who are in the party, and I think it's not good as far as I feel like the grassroots are not connecting with them, and they're not joining them. I think there's kind of this kind of us versus them thing that's going on. But I feel like the actual grassroots are open to Tea Partiers or people who are, you know, adamant with Herman Cain or another candidate. But I feel like maybe we don't know exactly how to participate. They want us to participate, and maybe there's a disconnect as far as how we can participate.
Who is the they that wants us to participate? You mean the party wants the grassroots to participate, or the grassroots wants the party to participate, or the grassroots wants to participate in the party?
No, the actual party, and as far as them bringing in other people, I mean, I think you would go to the average county Republican party, and they would have the same people who have been doing what they do for many years, and they would welcome anybody new, anybody.
You think? I tend to disagree with you. I don't know how Carl feels about this, but, you know, I'm telling you, the quote-unquote party picked Romney against my better wishes long before I even got to cast a vote. The quote-unquote party stood by with their hands in their pockets while my guy got railroaded off the ticket. The quote-unquote party took all the rest of the people and put them in the back corner like dirty little secrets while they pushed Romney down on me. So I don't agree that the party wants me involved at all. What do you think, Ron?
Carl?
Well, you know, here's what I think on the local levels. I mean, if you go to county by county, which I believe is one of the things that Frieda was talking about as I came in on the last end of that, you'll find that there are, and for lack of a better term, I think TJ is referring to the regulars in the party, the
mm-hmm.
folks that have been there for forever.
Right.
And most of those, I know a lot of those in Missouri, they're good folks, but they don't know what to think about Tea Partiers. And to be honest, they haven't taken a lot of time, they being the regulars, to learn about who these people are. What they will do is focus on some what I would call wild hairs in the Tea Party movement.
Right.
And then say, well, that's what they're all like.
Yeah.
And that's not the case. And but conversely, sometimes Tea Partiers do the same thing, or Patriots do the same thing with regulars, saying, well, you know, they'll never listen to us. And so there is a lack of communication. I think there is some work that could be done there. And if that's done, you know, and what MOP's trying to do, I think, for example, if that's done in a successful manner, then I think what you're talking about, because you're talking about really kind of the higher-ups. I mean, you're talking about the Republican National Committee, which really, you know, is an interesting deal, because you know who makes up the Republican National Committee? A committee man and a committee woman from every state.
Right.
That's supposed to represent the people. But, you know, it's kind of like what happens in Congress. There's this big disconnect with where they came from and what they're doing there. And so, again, it's just like, you know, changing bills and changing people in education. The things that MOP's doing, for example, I think will have a positive impact with that. But a lot of what we see in the problems that TJ is describing is that I don't think either side, whether it's the Patriots, Tea Party groups, and the regulars, have really bothered to get to know each other.
All right, TJ, you heard what I think. You heard what Carl thinks. You're going to get the last word on this one. Go ahead.
Yeah, but I think we've done this before, and I think that had anybody gone to their convention or their local thing, being a Santorum or a Gingrich or whatever,
yeah,
that is supposed to be under the water. That if you are belonging to this convention, and you're belonging to this Republican establishment, you either have to make your voice heard, or you have to agree with what they, you know, with Romney. And in a sense, if you don't agree with that, then you have no business being there, is my sense. That, like, we had this fight, and yes, we can fight this out on the local level, and we can fight it out with delegates and things like that. But the fight is over. And if
the fight
we
is
had
over.
Wanted to,
if we wanted to keep it going, well, then we, Gingrich and Santorum, they would have took it to the convention like they said they would have, but they didn't. So,
oh, I agree.
It's over.
I agree, TJ. I agree. Now, I won't go as far as to say that I need to agree with Romney now, but I need to get on board. I need to go cast my vote against Barack Obama. I need to toe the line. I'm going to pray for something like a Romney Rubio ticket. I'm going to pray that we in the grassroots who believe in liberty first. Actually get a whole lot of seats in the House and Senate, but I'm going to go do it, and I agree with you 100%. We need to quit as a group now of patriots bad-mouthing Mitt Romney as though he were the devil himself, and we need to get on the ticket.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks for your call. Great call, TJ. Thanks.
Thank you.
Carl, you know what? I've got like 7 minutes left, and I haven't even gotten into. Will you come back sometime on an Hour of Truth on Monday or Thursday with me?
No, sure, you bet.
Yeah, I had this whole agenda of things I wanted to get into tonight, and what we really want to talk with Carl about is this: how a bill. I'm a legislator, and I've just been elected to the. To the House of Representatives from my district down here in Springfield. And I get up to Jefferson City, and I'm driving up to the Capitol building one day, and I'm watching this birdhouse in some guy's front yard, and the birds are going in and out, and it's so cute and so fun to watch that I drive my car in a ditch. So I get to my office all pissed off, and I want to write a bill now that says you can't have a birdhouse within 25 feet of the street. So what do I do? I mean, what do I do now? I want to write this bill. What do I do?
Well, you go down to House Research, and you said, this is what I want to do. The stupid birds maybe ran off the deal, so I want an Obama bill that blames the people who built the birdhouse.
Okay.
So what happens is, pardon?
I don't actually write the bill then.
No. I mean, and very, very few people, even the lawyers, which they kind of come and go in the legislature, they usually don't even write their bills. But what you do is you put, here's what I want it to do.
Right.
And then research, what they will do is to look at the law. Where does it go in the law? You know, because there are 20 law books. You know, it seems like
right.
For every $1 billion we spend, we have a law book. So I don't know, if we cut the budget, we can cut the laws too, I guess. So, where does it go? What's the proper language? Has this been done before? Is it already in statute and you just don't know it, and you already have recourse? All of those sorts of things. They do all of that research. That's what they are there for to do. And then once they determine that, they come back and say, look, there's been court decisions that say 25 feet is not allowed, but 50 feet would be. And
okay.
You would say, okay, do it 50 feet.
Right.
And so they go through all of that for you. And then they present you with the bill. They go through and says, here's what you wanted, and here's where we do everything that you wanted.
Okay.
And then you look through it and read it.
Now, do these...
Go ahead.
Well,
it's an excellent example because that really, I mean, people don't sometimes know how these bills get generated. And you know, I hear we were talking about lobbyists earlier, where lobbyists come in with bills and drop them on your desk. Now, I will tell you that sometimes that does happen, that people do generate the ideas, and they will help you craft them. But,
right.
But you're responsible for getting drafted up and for what they say.
Right.
But it could be something, like you said, it's a personal experience. It could be something, a lot of people complain, and I'm not saying that they don't have reason to complain, but, you know, the state exercise is the jumping jack. You know that legislator didn't sit in his office one day doing jumping jacks and said, we ought to make this the state exercise. That probably came, I don't know this for sure, but what a lot of those things come from is some third grade or fifth grade class in that legislator's district, you know, had this little contest, and they said, it ought to be the jumping jacks. And so that's how those sorts of things. So it could be a constituent suggestion, could be a personal experience. You see what other states do, and are passing a good law. We ought to do that here in Missouri. Those are the sorts of ways that those ideas get generated, but they have to be drafted up to fit Missouri laws and Missouri's constitution.
Okay, now do these researchers and bill writers, they're full time bureaucrats up there, right? They don't come and go, right?
Right. They're a pretty stable group. A lot of them, most of them, have been there for a number of years. So you have, so let's talk about the structure. You have this one group that's called Legislative Research, and then so they cover both the House and the Senate, and they have particular deals. Like they do what's known as fiscal notes. How much is a bill supposedly cost if you implement it, or how much will it save if you implement it? So that's part of Legislative Research. Then each of the two chambers, the House and the Senate, have their own bill drafters.
I see.
And their own research departments. And so they in both cases, those people have generally been there for quite some time.
Okay. And that's certainly all right, because they're writers. I mean, these guys don't make up laws, do they? They just write what the legislature asks them to.
That's correct. So they're not coming to the legislature and saying, hey, you know what? You ought to do this.
Right.
We've been trying to do this for years. You ought to do this. That's not their job, and that's not what they do.
Okay.
Now, they will make suggestions to you. If you come down with your birdhouse law, maybe they've been through this before or whatever, but they will come back and say, you know, the suggestions are, you can't do it 25 feet, but 50 feet you could, or whatever. And that's part of their experience and part of their research.
Now, is there anybody at this step that actually would come to me and say, Dave, this is not constitutional. You just can't do this. Or is that even a consideration that they make there?
Well, House Research would let you know, should let you know, and I've not known of a case where they wouldn't let you know that there either is specifically a constitutional issue or there may be.
Okay.
But again, it is not their job to say you can't do it.
Right.
Because you're the legislature, and you have the responsibility for your bill, but they have the responsibility to let you know whether something is not constitutional.
Okay. So I get this bill back now from the writer, and it's laying on my desk. Now what do I do?
So once you get it in the form that you want it in, you get what's called in the House a blue back. And that blue back has spaces for signatures. So you're the sponsor, you'll sign it first. And then if you want, said, hey, I know these people would be interested in having a birdhouse law, you would go to those people and ask them if they want to be a co-sponsor. And if they do, they sign their name and their district, and they become a co-sponsor. And once you've done that, you would then take that bill to the clerk's office. There's a chief clerk of the House. They are the bill enrollers, if you will. And so you deliver that blue back with your signature and your co-sponsor signatures to the clerk's office. Now, that is the first official process then that happens. It gets entered into the system. The bill is transferred to the House clerk, and it becomes what's known as first read.
Okay.
So first reading in the House and the Senate is merely a reference to the title. So your House Bill 1,
right?
Relating to birdhouses in the state of Missouri, it would be your title. Once that is first read, it becomes public to everybody on the internet. It's available on the internet.
Okay, so that's my I'm Dave Court down here in Springfield, Missouri. That's my first shot at seeing this thing.
Right. Now you could. Have heard that was going to happen, and you could go ask for a copy of that from the legislator who's going to sponsor it. And there's nothing to stop them from giving you a copy. But that would be the first official notice. So if you are watching the internet,
right,
and that's your source of information, you would first see that right then.
Okay.
And you would have it available to you to read online, both the summary as well as the bill.
Okay, so now at this point, I'm Dave Court down here in Springfield, Missouri, and this bill is going to require me to move 14 birdhouses, and I just don't want to do that. Do I have a recourse at this point in time?
You do by writing your contacting your legislators first, obviously, and saying, you know, Representative so-and-so sponsored House Bill 1, Birdhouses in Missouri, and that's just ridiculous, and here's why. And so you weigh in with them. Because the bill has been first read, the very next day, or the next legislative day, because it could be, you know, Thursday when it's first read, and they don't meet again until Monday.
Right.
So the very next legislative day, it's called second read, and same, it doesn't even get read by title, then it's just printed in the journal.
Right.
At that point, so it still hasn't gone anywhere, it's just been first read, second read. At that point, the speaker has that bill in his or her possession. In other words,
okay.
The person who holds that bill, that blueback, has it in possession. Now, the speaker determines what happens to that bill.
Okay.
So if your legislator goes into the speaker, and well, let's say that, you know, 50 legislators get calls from all around the state about House Bill 1 and birdhouses, and they go to the speaker and said, you're not going to refer that bill, are you? You know, the speaker can say, well, I don't have to refer it. And perhaps the speaker just keeps it in his drawer.
Right.
And until the last day of session, because all bills have to be referred, a lot of bills don't get referred until the very last day of session, which obviously they're dead. But so the speaker, after his first read, second read, the speaker then holds that bill and decides at least two things. One, is he going to refer it to a committee? And two, what committee is he going to refer it to?
Right.
And so during that process, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, please.
Well, during that process, up until all that time, your main point is to be talking to your legislator, to be rallying, you know, other birdhouse folks around the state, or, you know, your association, if you have a birdhouse association, for example, making sure they're weighing in with their legislators.
Right.
So that they know that that's going on. Once the speaker then decides he's going to refer it to the committee, then you can start contacting the members of that committee.
Okay.
About your problems with the bill. And you know, there's no rhyme or reason necessarily when they have a committee hearing on it, if they have a committee hearing, because they're never required to have a committee hearing on a bill. They can all die in their committee. But you weigh in there. But once they do have a requirement to post when they're going to have their public hearing at least 24 hours in advance.
Okay.
So you'll be watching. You're watching this bill. You know it's been first read, second read. You know it's been referred to, you know, the House Committee on Birdhouses. And so you're watching that committee's postings. You know they meet Tuesdays at 8 a.m. every Tuesday. So you're
right.
Watching to make sure that they got posted. Okay, they're going to meet on this on Tuesday. Then that's when you start doing, you either make your decision, you're going to drive to Jeff City and testify personally at the hearing, you and all of your association members.
Mm-hmm.
If it's an issue that, you know, Ron in Missouri First has said, hey, we'll make this witness form available to you and we'll have somebody deliver those, you could weigh in that way as well.
Okay.
So that's how you do it at the committee.
So now I've just had a couple of questions that I've always had answered, and one would be, I've always wondered why my representative – who I'm counting on to get this birdhouse law passed for me, would feel it necessary to go out and find 7 or 8 or 9 co-sponsors for this thing, and one of those would be to carry some weight when you take that to the speaker. Am I right?
Yeah, you know, you want to get different people look at it a different way, but yeah, the more people you have sign on, the more emphasis that it has with the speaker about being referred, about how popular it is, and so on. So, yes, that would be the case.
But this speaker's really quite a powerful person then.
Oh, absolutely. The speaker can decide. The speaker, I mean, their job is to run the railroad in the House. And so they're going to decide when bills get referred, if they get referred, and where they go.
So there you go. So what we were talking about earlier about my two favorite guys who left from Springfield here to go up to Jefferson City, and how do they get perverted by the system? I mean, this is one of the things that they have to consider every day is, you know, I'm counting on this guy to say yes or no initially to what I want to get done.
With as many bills as goes through the House and the Senate, the Speaker doesn't care about all of them. If the Speaker cares about a bill, you'll know what bills those are. You'll have discussed those in caucus. None of those should be surprises. So it's not like you, just because a Speaker refers a bill to a committee, you really don't feel any pressure that you've got to vote for that bill or support that bill. Now, if it comes out of committee, and we can talk about that process, and the Speaker makes it known that this is an important bill, we need to pass it, then that's where the pressure starts to come on. And in some cases, though, I mean, you rely upon people who develop expertise. You know, I, as a legislator, I couldn't possibly know everything about everything.
Right.
If you want budget, okay, I'm your budget guy. But if it was legal issues, we had a guy, Richard Byrd, who unfortunately passed away day after one of our sessions, who was the sharpest, keenest legal mind I've ever known. He's the guy you went to talk to because Richard read every bill and could tell you exactly what it did in the legal world. And so everybody kind of develops their own expertise. And you rely upon those folks. If they're saying it's good, you're generally going to go with them because you can't keep up with every bill that's out there.
No, I understand that because you're a full-time legislator, and we've got people out here on the outside who try to spend full time doing that, and they can't even keep up with everything, can they?
Right. But conversely, like prescription drugs, for example, once you let them know that's a problem, then they should feel the obligation to go find out more about it. They no longer can just trust the expert in that area. They need to now go in and dig into this and find, okay, why am I being told this is a problem when this person's saying it's not?
Right.
And if they're not doing that, then they're failing in that level of responsibility.
So now it's in the committee and they're having a public hearing.
Right.
So I drive up to now the public hearing in the committee is unlike the debate on the floor. My only choice if I want to hear what's going on is to drive up there and listen to it. Right. There's no dissemination of the chatter that goes on in the committee room.
Correct. There are no recordings, particularly in the House. Occasionally the Senate records committee hearings, but not on a regular basis. But in the House, there is no internet. There are usually about 40 committees in the House, so there's no 40 channels to tune in on. So yes, you have to, if you want to know about it, you have to go hear it. People can send and get permission to have those recorded.
Right.
But it's on a case by case basis. But yes, if you want to hear exactly what's happening in the committee, you will have to go.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but this is important to understand because this is really where the deals are struck. This is really where the little changes are made. This is really where the fine tuning goes on, is in this committee, right?
Right. I mean, there is a process to amend bills on the floor, but the committee is the first opportunity you have to make any changes to the bill. You know, a bill can't be changed in first reading or second reading. It has to be changed in the committee.
Right.
So
there's a guy who absolutely thinks that 25 feet is ridiculous, but 50 feet is all right. They would fix that in the committee, right?
Right. If he could convince the majority of the committee to go along with him to make that change, then that's how it would happen and where it would happen would be in committee most likely.
Okay. So he introduces an amendment, right?
Correct. He has two ways he can do it. He could do that by amendment, which most of those things happen by amendment, and it would get adopted. And there may be several amendments to that bill. So maybe it's not only is it going to be 50 feet instead of 25, but the poles now are going to go from 10 feet to 15 feet.
Okay.
And those may all be separate amendments. And then what will generally happen is, each one of those amendments will be voted on unless they're withdrawn, and they'll be passed or not. Once they make all of those amendments, the chairman, once they go into, and that's only happens in executive session. It does not necessarily happen on the day of the public hearing.
Oh.
The public hearing is different than having an executive session. Public hearing is solely for the purpose of taking testimony. There will be no changes made at that time.
I see.
And in the House, they can and often do have a public hearing and do an executive session perhaps on the bill, depending on what the bill is, in the same day, but it's usually not likely for most bills. So you could go up for the public hearing, and they wouldn't have an executive session on that bill until, you know, the next meeting or two meetings later or sometime.
Okay. And that executive session is closed to the public?
No, it's open.
It's open to the public.
Yes, it's a formality. They have to move to go into it. So it's parliamentary procedure in the committees as well.
Okay.
And so they have to move to go into the executive session. But it is all open. There are no committee deliberations that are closed to the public.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good to know. But now this executive session, this is where they will act or not act on all of those little nuances that were introduced by the public at the public hearing.
Right, right. So
go ahead.
Well, what they'll do then is say, okay, do I have a motion to do pass House Bill 1? And somebody will say, so moved, and they'll get a second. And then it is open for those amendments we just discussed. That's when those amendments would occur.
Okay.
Or not occur. I mean, if there were no amendments, they would just adopt and recommend do pass. They would just recommend do pass House Bill 1. Once those amendments are made and added to the bill, then what would happen is that the committee chairman would most likely offer to roll all those amendments into a House committee substitute for House Bill 1.
Right.
So what that does, it streamlines the process, because then you put all those amendments into one bill, it becomes a committee substitute. Because if you did not do that, then the House, when that made it to the House floor, if there were five amendments from the committee, those would be House committee amendments. Each one of those amendments would have to be voted on separately.
Oh, I see. Right.
And so when you do it in the House committee substitute, you just do it all in one deal. Now, instead of making five separate amendments, if the chairman knew that there was general consensus about what those changes were, he or she or any member of the committee could offer that House committee substitute from the beginning and not have those five separate amendments.
Okay.
Now, in the committee. Now, the House committee substitute can be amended too, so if I didn't like one of those five, I could offer an amendment to take it out. But you're still acting on the House committee substitute.
Okay. So that's one thing I guess I never understood, what the difference between an amendment and a substitute was. I always had this picture of a House committee substitute where a bill goes in about birdhouses and 25 feet and comes out about doghouses and being painted red.
Well, that can happen too.
Oh.
It usually happens. And that's how it happens in a House committee substitute. So you go on with birdhouses and you come out with birdhouses and doghouses. And that's where it would happen, is in that committee process.
Right.
Where it would happen. Now, someone could try that on the floor, but it's a lot more difficult on the floor. So the likely place that sort of change that you're talking about there would take place in committee in a substitute.
Okay. Now, I'm not on the committee. I'm just a representative from Springfield, and I'm not on the birdhouse committee. I'm on the backyard swing committee. And so, how do I get it to that committee that I want it to be 50 feet instead of 25 feet?
You would talk to the chairman. You would talk to any member of that committee who might be, you know, close to your area. I mean, you know,
uh-huh.
Springfield, for example, has what, six or seven reps,
right?
Greene County. So you'd talk to any of those folks that were on the committee. And then you would talk to other committee members as many as you could to try to convince them that is a change that needs to be made.
Okay.
May or may not listen to you.
It's not like, though, that I don't have any input at all just because I'm not on that committee.
No. You don't get to vote. You don't get to vote
right.
on the House committee substitute.
Right.
Or an amendment in the committee. But, no, you have every ability and right to go talk to any and all members of that committee.
Okay. So out now to the floor, do pass. Now, that means that do pass, don't pass. That simply means that the committee is recommending to the whole House that they do or do not pass this thing, right?
Right. Right. Well, there's another step in between. So let's talk about uncommittee, how you do
okay.
that.
Okay. I don't want to skip anything.
Yeah, so here's what has to happen. Again, parliamentary procedure, you have a substitute.
Right.
And let's say you had five amendments. The chairman says, let's roll all those into a substitute. Do I have a motion to roll? Yes, okay. All right, so now you have a voice vote on adopting the House committee substitute.
Okay.
So all of those have been rolled in. You do a voice vote. A member can request that it be by roll call, but most of those are voice votes. It passes. And now you have a motion to do pass House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1. And that is a recorded vote.
So oh,
after
I see.
After the committee meeting, you can go get a copy of who voted yes and who voted no on House Committee Substitute.
Right. On the Internet, right. You can do that. You can actually look up the journal for that day and get that, right?
Right. That'll be a little bit delayed. But, you know, if you're there, you can get it quicker. But, yes, you can get that on the Internet. Now, so then what happens is, the chairman controls what happens to that bill. Remember I told you the guy who has control,
right?
The guy or gal has control of that blue back.
Uh-huh.
If they physically have it, they have it. And we had a representative from Jefferson County walk out of the building with the Cardinal Stadium bill when I was a freshman, so it couldn't be voted on.
Because
she had possession of it, she could do that.
Okay. Thank her very much.
So the chairman now, here's what happens too, is the speaker will give every chairman what is known as a slot. In other words, they may have 50 bills in their committee, and the speaker will say, you know, by February 15th, you can report out one bill. Well, if you voted on 10 bills out of those 50, the chairman has to choose which of those 10 bills he wants to report.
Oh, yeah.
So it may or may not be your House Bill 1.
Wow. Okay.
So that chairman gets to decide which bill that he or she reports out. So let's say that he does choose to report out House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1. That then is reported out and goes immediately to what's called the Rules Committee.
Okay.
It doesn't go directly to the House. The Rules Committee has a couple of functions. Their primary function is to make sure that there aren't any glaring errors. And for the most part, they do a good job of that. Sometimes they still miss it. If there is a problem with a bill, they vote to send it back to committee and have them fix it. The Rules Committee, though, can also hold on to bills for as long as they want. So it's another bottleneck in the system, if you will.
Right.
But let's just assume that they're, okay, House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1, okay, they voted out. Then it goes back to the speaker. All right?
I'm with you. It's sitting on the speaker's desk now. It's made it out of the Birdhouse Committee, do pass. It's made it through the Rules Committee, which doesn't get to say do pass or don't pass, right? They just get to say it's good to go.
Yeah, actually, if the Rules Committee, it doesn't happen very often, it has happened on a couple occasions, but if the Rules Committee says nay, it doesn't go anywhere either. It fails.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So it does have to actually pass that with enough votes. The majority of them actually do. Then it goes to the Speaker.
Okay.
Now the Speaker's back in control again, right, because he has possession
right.
of the bill. He decides when and if it goes on the calendar.
Right.
On the House calendar that you referenced earlier.
Right.
Because here's where the Speaker loses his power.
Okay.
Is once he puts it on the calendar, theoretically anyway, he has lost all control of that bill.
Because
now the floor leader controls whether or not they go to that bill.
Okay.
So the Speaker says, okay, put this on the calendar, or let's hold on to this for a while.
Okay.
That's another opportunity for people to weigh in. You know, House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1,
took birdhouses from 25 feet to 50 feet and the poles from 10 to 15, and then it added doghouses.
Yeah.
So, you know, so if enough people are weighing in, said, you know, that's really, you know, that shouldn't happen, you know, don't refer, you know, ask them, not, don't put that on the calendar. I mean, that's, so that's another opportunity that your representative has to weigh in with the speaker.
And you're actually wanting to write the speaker himself about that.
Correct.
Right, okay.
Correct.
Okay,
correct.
But it does get put on the calendar. Now, just take a sidestep here and tell us, I'm somewhat confused as to what is the formal and informal calendar.
Okay, so the formal calendar is where every bill first goes.
Okay.
And so when it's on the formal calendar, there's an order they're supposed to go by. And so the first bill is the first one I'm supposed to go to and so forth. They've been a little lax on that in the last couple of years.
Okay.
But it's supposed to be there, and it's on the formal calendar. So that's when it's due for perfection.
Okay.
So perfection is the step that now the committee has done their work.
Right.
The floor is now open for perfecting it, so, you know, I don't like the fact they added the doghouse. So I have an amendment to take doghouses out of there.
Okay.
Or I don't like the color red that they require on the doghouse. I want it to be blue.
Okay.
So I have an amendment to make it blue. Or I have an amendment to add, you know, something else.
Right.
Know, maybe, you know, maybe I want Martin houses or something, you know. All of those sorts of things. That's when you do that, is during perfection.
Okay, so this is where all the house amendments get put in.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. That's called the perfection process. And during that period of time, what could happen? They could get into some tight spot, if you will, that says, "Okay, this is a problem. How are we going to work this out?" That's when they may put it on the informal calendar. And on the informal calendar, you can go to any bill on the informal calendar at any time without noticing it up or anything. If it's on the informal calendar, it's always live, if you will, always able to go to that calendar and take it up.
Oh, I see.
So the formal calendar is supposed to be, here's the order we take these bills in. The Senate does it that way. The Senate, if you've ever listened to the Senate debate, you'll hear the floor leader say, "Mr. President, would you recognize the senator from Green?" And Senator Green says, "Mr. President, I ask that you lay Senate Bill 1 over on the informal calendar." So what they're doing is getting those bills out of the way on the formal calendar so they can get to the one they actually want to do.
Right.
And the House has gotten away from that in the last couple of years, but that's what the difference between the formal calendar and informal calendar is supposed to be.
Okay. So the formal calendar is bills that theoretically are going to be called up for action.
Right. Now, the House has rules. And when we took the majority, we put rules in to change them that says you have to give notice when you're going to plan on taking a bill up. So at the end of the day, you know, the floor leader is supposed to announce, "Mr. Speaker, body should be ready to take up a House committee substitute for House Bill 1 tomorrow."
Okay.
And so you know that if you have an amendment that you haven't turned in yet, because the amendments, the rules are you have to have the amendments turned in before you take the bill up.
Okay. You can't just spring an amendment. You can't just spring an amendment on your cohorts.
Correct.
When the bill hits the floor.
Correct. So that's, but you can do an amendment to an amendment, which does not have to be distributed, but any amendments have to be out there. So that's your warning. That's your notice. So you know that you better get that amendment ready to go and turned in, because it has to be turned in and distributed prior to taking the bill up. So the next day you take the bill up, you adopt all the amendments that you want, or you throw out the blue one and keep the red, whatever. Once that's done, there is normally a voice vote. It's usually not a roll call vote. You can request a roll call vote, but it's usually a voice vote on perfection of House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1 as amended. It appears to pass on a voice vote, and then what happens is the folks down in research take all the amendments that were adopted, they come up with a perfected bill, and that's on the system,
And now that perfected bill is on the third read calendar.
Right.
All right. So anything on the third read calendar cannot be changed if it's a House bill in the House, for example.
So it's done. It's going to pass or fail the way it stands.
Correct. So okay. The next day, as soon as the next legislative day, they can take that House Committee substitute for House Bill 1 up for third reading. People can still talk on it, but they can't change it.
Right.
And once that vote comes up, it has to be a recorded vote, and they have to have at least 82 members to pass and third read a bill.
Okay. Okay.
And if that's the case, then that bill is done in the House for now.
Okay.
And gets sent to the Senate.
Oh, so it's third read, it's voted on, it's passed, and it's done in the House. It's done in the House, and that's what it is when I'm reading all actions, when I go to Missouri bill tracking and I
right.
click on all actions and I get down to third read and passed. And then there's a number there saying what the margin was that it passed by, and I know
sure.
that it's now out the door and headed across the rotunda to the Senate.
Right, and if you're looking at that, it'll also tell you on what page of the House Journal that recorded vote is on.
Exactly,
you
can go
see who voted yes and no for.
Right.
And
okay.
Now,
that was very, very educational, Carl. I'm going to beg you to come back with me, and you and I will talk offline about when we can do that. To finish this up, we're well over our time here, and people are getting tired, and I'm sure that this is just boggling some people's minds. It certainly does boggle mine. Would you come back and finish this off with us sometime? We now have House Substitute 1.
House Committee Substitute 1
out the door and into the Senate. So we're going to pick it up there next time we talk to Carl. Boy, Carl, thanks a million. I mean, this has been great for me. I don't know about anybody else.
Yeah, no problem. And it's a lot easier once you kind of go through those. At least as you see more and more of it, you get used to it more.
Right. Okay. Well, we've been talking with Carl from United for Missouri, Carl Bearden. He's been a legislator. He knows how these things work, and we've been asking him tonight to explain to us in a little bit more definition than the Schoolhouse Rock song how a bill really becomes a law. We've got it out of the House now, and when we come back, we'll just review that very quickly before we start moving it in the Senate. And I'll be talking to you folks again on Monday night in the Hour of Truth. We're going to be talking Monday night with who's the guy that Ron Calzone is working so hard for? Would-be Senator Ed Emery. We're going to be talking with him on Monday night. Good guy. And we'll be talking with him on Monday. I will get together with Carl here over the weekend, and we'll figure out a time he can come back with me, maybe Thursday, if he's free. If not, we'll find a time that he can come back, and we'll finish this up, because this absolutely 100% intrigues me, Carl, and frustrates me. Just two more seconds. Tell me quickly. I was frustrated a couple of times, and I emailed you a couple of times this last session and said, Carl, what the hell's going on here? As I watch a bill move back and forth from the formal to the informal calendar day after day after day.
Yeah, so actually they'll never move back to the formal. So informal, they'll pick it up, they'll lay it over, they'll pick it up, because in both houses a bill can only be on the informal calendar for it's like 10 days, and then if you have not at least brought it up and put it back over, it dies. And
okay.
So that's why you'll see them pick it up and put it back on the informal calendar without doing anything else. But we can talk about that a little bit more next time.
Okay,
as well.
We will. Thank you very much, Carl. I appreciate your coming along really a whole lot. That's Carl Bearden, United for Missouri. Is that com or org, Carl?
.org. UnitedForMissouri.org.
UnitedForMissouri.org. Good organization. Come to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Join us. Carl keeps us updated on all of the things that we need to get involved in. And I appreciate it, Carl. We'll talk to you next time. This is Dave This is Missouri Grassroots Radio Network. This is the Friday Night Roundtable, and we will talk to you again on Monday. Thanks for tuning in. Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.